Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. It's a global story. We have got that global story, plus more drugs with less research. But first, U.S. to own Venezuela's oil for 100 years in Trump deal. The United States could own a significant share of Venezuelan oil for 100 years as part of Donald Trump's biggest oil deal in world history, announcing the agreement on Friday night, which used to be dumping day. The U.S. president said the deal with Caracas would give Washington majority control of 65 billion barrels of proven petroleum reserves. It would give America a foothold in some of the world's most lucrative energy fields and pave the way for U.S. corporations and contractors, like Chevron, I do believe, to return to Venezuela to oversee the day-to-day operations. Washington is thought to have sought 50-year leases on 17 oil fields with the option to renew them for another 50 years. Such a move would effectively allow the U.S. to control more than a fifth of Venezuelan oil reserves for the next century. The deal will kickstart this hell of a Kickstarter. Kickstart development in 17 of Venezuela's most promising oil and gas fields, said Delcy Rodriguez, Venezuela's interim president. She called the agreement a historic milestone in bilateral relations between Venezuela and the U.S. that would usher in a new era of recovery, growth, production, security, and prosperity for our people. Most of Venezuela's oil reserves are found in the Orinoco Belt, an area of 21,000 square miles along South American nation's Orinoco River, with significant reserves also found under Lake Maracaibo, that Orinoco flow that Enya sang about so many years ago. Yes, we do have it in the relateds here, James. Oil giant Chevron, this is pretty much top news here in the States. Oil giant Chevron is expected to announce it will expand operations in Venezuela, possibly the understatement of this episode. Machado calls for free elections in Venezuela, first remarks since Trump oil deal, and they're not talking about Manny Machado from the San Diego Padres. And we see new photos. Dudes, I gotta say, man, dudes, you know, of course, living in a prison will, you know, thin you up a little bit. He's looking svelte. He looks good. He looks like he's smiling. Captured Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro shares first prison photos. James, 100 years of oil.
It makes for quite an attention-grabbing headline, but my question is, what is this story really about? And I guess we don't know, because at least at the time that we're recording this episode, there still aren't any actual real details about what this deal is. So there's speculation about how this is actually going to work, and are they setting up some sort of joint company in which there will be U.S. investment that will produce the help produce the oil? There's very sketchy details so far, but it raises the even more fundamental question of, why? What is the point of this? I mean, as we know, at this point, the U.S. is actually a net oil exporter. So it's not like the Venezuelan oil is desperately needed. And although Venezuela has the largest proven oil reserves in the world, they only account for about 1% of the oil that's being consumed on a daily basis. So again, it's not like this is some flood of new oil that's going to flood into U.S. markets or something. And add to that the fact that less than half of U.S. oil refineries have the coking capacity to handle the heavy sour crude that comes from Venezuela. And it has been estimated that it'll take something like $180 billion in investments over the next 15 years just to bring oil production capacity in Venezuela back to 1990s levels. And all of this starts to look not quite like the sweeping, amazing flood of oil that that the headlines seem to profess. So this goes back to my thesis that this, as well as Iran / Strait of Hormuz and other oil market disruptions and moves that are taking place right now, are not really about the oil itself. It's more about keeping that oil away from China and other would-be competitors at the moment in the 2D geopolitical chess match that's taking place as part of the larger 3D World War III scenario that I've talked about before.
So it's not going to help American suckers at the gas pump. See, man, it's always about all the middlemen. It's about all those contracts and deals that'll go on for 15 years. Companies whose names we don't know. Chevron, of course, super famous. But all of those contractors, all those middlemen, that's really who all of this is going to benefit in the short and very long term. And it reminds me, I will steal and ruin a joke from Hans Kim that he said on Kill Tony. It's like, I don't know why people call Trump a Nazi. What kind of Nazi goes to war for Jews? I wish he was a Nazi. Maybe gas wouldn't be $5. But that's how we get going on New World next week, episode 642, Laugh to Not Cry, as bond sell-off threatens to squeeze borrowers around the world. Again, it's about the little guy getting squeezed out and all the middlemen getting fat as ticks. A global sell-off in government bonds intensified, pushing borrowing costs in some of the world's largest economies to the highest levels in decades. The move threatens to ripple through a wide range of debt, including business loans and mortgages for already stretched consumers. A combination of factors are prompting investors to demand higher returns to hold government debt, a flood of borrowing by the world's richest nations, expanding budget deficits, persistent inflation, and few signs that countries are able or willing to take steps to improve these conditions. The yield on 10-year U.S. Treasury notes, perhaps the most influential interest rate in the world, reached its highest since January 2025, you know, when Trump 2.0 started again, briefly hitting 4.8%, and the yield on the 30-year bond continued to hover around a two-decade high, you know, since around 9/11. Yields move inversely to prices, so the rise in yields reflects a drop in prices. America's rising borrowing costs have set off a battle between Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and investors, but the factors pushing up bond yields in the U.S. are also issues in other big markets. It's a global story, said Peter Schraffick, a strategist at RBC Capital Markets in London. I assume that's the city of London. In related news, U.S. strikes on Iran boat push Brent oil towards $95 a barrel. And again, James, the story I keep coming to you asking about, this seems like a giant story that Japan is blowing trillions of yen to prop up a little bit of yen. Yen weakens past 160 per dollar, eroding intervention gains, basically saying all the money they threw in to try and prop it up, all wasted, and all wasted just in these last few months. James, and I believe the question I ask you, what's this all about?
Yes, well, you're right, exactly right. They're throwing trillions of yen at the problem and getting tiny boosts in the yen, and then it immediately weakens past any gains that were made. The yen is definitely tanking, and there are a number of structural reasons for that that go back to the bubble pop of 1990 and what has happened in the Japanese economy since then, and the structural issues that have existed around the yen carry trade, etc., all starting to wind down as the Japan's complete stagnation, its inability to get any inflation whatsoever for the past three decades has suddenly reversed on a dime. And now, boy, oh boy, do we have inflation here, and the price of everything is going up, including the price of borrowing, which of course means that everyone has to unwind their yen carry trade, where they've been borrowing basically yen for free and then investing in the US and other places where they can get a good return on it. Well, now they have to bring that back because suddenly, hey, their interest rates are going up. We're going to have to actually pay money for this yen that we're borrowing. Oh, we got to bring it back. And that does not help things. So anyway, the yen carry trade is unwinding. The yen itself is tanking. It is, things are happening on a macroeconomic level. But that's really the point of that bond story that is the big news right now. And the important thing about it is, any coverage that you see about this story is going to talk about, oh, you know, it might mention US and it might mention, oh, it's also, you know, bond rates are going up here and there. But the bigger picture of this is somewhat baffling from the non-explanations that are provided. Yeah, okay, yes, governments are borrowing more and more. And yeah, the $40 trillion US debt mark was a big psychological barrier, etc. But why suddenly are our bond rates spiking everywhere? Japan, Germany, France, Canada, US, all hitting multi-decade highs. What is going on? Oh, okay. It's not about just government debt. And for some reason, even though they're borrowing just like they always do, suddenly it's happening. There are specific reasons about that. And for people who are interested, I'll throw a link into a very interesting video from Casual Finance called "The World's Safest Market is Breaking," talking about how the defined pension benefit funds are basically being unwound as part of a structural change that's been taking place over the last couple of decades. But basically, chickens are coming home to roost. People are starting to use 401ks to directly invest rather than having pension funds that invest long-term in long-term bonds. Now people are buying short-term treasuries. The maturity of the debt is getting smaller and smaller, which means that they're having to renew the debt on a more regular basis. And a bunch of debt that was that was issued in 2019 is suddenly coming due as maturity and is being recycled now at 1-2% higher rates, which is causing these structural problems. It's not the sexiest financial story you've ever heard, but it's an actual explanation for what is actually happening right now and why this is a deep structural problem that is everywhere around the world right now, and there's no easy way out of it. So anyway, long story short, exactly as you said, it's the people at the bottom who are going to be squeezed the hardest and the fastest. And what else is new? So as always, I think we have to be looking for ways to get off of their controlled system and finding ways to trade with each other in ways that go around the controlled central bank funny money that they're throwing, papering over these problems with.
St. Carlin's last big show, Life is Worth Losing. It's the one where he talks about the American dream. You got to be asleep to believe it. It's a big club. You're not in it. In that same bit, he says, and next, they're coming for your pensions. They want all that money back. And that was, what, 20 years ago? This, James, does remind me a bit of the Bush-era plunge protection team, where you had folks and goblins in the Treasury and beyond essentially propping up markets to keep them from falling down, as Samson seems determined to knock the temple down. Our third and final story on This New World Next Week, 642. Not a shocker, but it's good to get it on the record. Nearly 70% of new drugs now win FDA approval with one study. We have talked again recently about how things seem to come through with the hair on fire memo saying you should approve this drug yesterday. And I'll repeat the fantastic line again. The food part of the FDA ensures constant customers for the drugs part of the FDA. A new study tracks how FDA drug approvals shifted from multiple trials to just one. And maybe who's paying for the evidence? This just in. It's a revolving door. Most new drugs approved by the FDA in 2024 relied on just a single clinical trial, down from a majority backed by three or more trials in 2016. Industry funding for the studies behind drug approvals jumped from under half in 2016 to more than 80% by 2024, while NIH-backed research nearly disappeared. Won't someone please think of the Fauci? So they're saying this is all now privately funded. They pay for someone to investigate their own drugs and, of course, find no wrongdoing. It's like the cops. Trial results are also slow to reach the public, with delays averaging well over 2 years, despite a one-year legal deadline and almost zero enforcement. The study cannot prove that the 2016 21st Century Cures Act caused the decline, and it does not show that today's drugs are less safe. It's just correlation is not causation. Damn you, Trump. I'm just kidding. The 21st Century Cures Act is a U.S. law enacted December 13, 2016, signed by President Barack Obama to accelerate medical innovation and improve patient care. Cha-chingo, James. One party loads the gun and the next one pulls the trigger.
The real question here is, because this is specifically talking about 2024 data, but I'd be interested in this, say, the 2025 data. Did MAHA make a difference? Was there any difference there with RFK Jr.? But actually, really, the entire premise of this story, obviously being reported by the mainstream media, is exactly opposite to what we should be interested in. I.e., they are interested in, the FDA and its approval process is the gold standard. And if it's being degraded, oh my God, what will the people do? Whereas in reality, the FDA is not there to help you. It is at best there to help the corporations that are part of the regulatory capture that has defined the FDA since its very inception and existence. As my well-informed viewers will know from my Film Literature New World Order podcast on The Jungle, Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, you will know about the actual real birth of the FDA and what that was about and why it was, a meatpacker scam, etc. Anyway, the point is, it's not like the FDA is there to keep you safe and boy, you should rely on, the FDA approved this, therefore I'll put it in my body. No. How about do your own research, as they say, and no regulatory body should be able to come between you and whatever life-saving medical intervention you have decided after looking at it for yourself and looking at the studies that exist and listening to expert advice and researching things on your own. You come to the decision that I want this medical intervention. Who is the FDA to say yes or no to that? And why do they have the right over what goes in your body? Anyway, so I think the fundamental premise of this entire story is completely bass-ackwards.
I find it interesting how similar it is to discussions we've had both privately and publicly, James. You spend all the money on your movie to make sure it opens at number one. Boom, we made all our money back that week one. I don't really care what happens to it after that. Inshittification occurs. I think it's the same thing with these drugs. And we might have to pull this off the market. As the pithy joke I often like to make, did you know that every item recalled by the FDA was originally approved by the FDA? I think that's a similar thing, whether it's drugs or some brand new movie or some garbage social media platform, James. It seems like that is the Cory Doctorow word all the way around. I want to throw in a sad mention right here and doesn't give the honor and respect that it deserves. I found out last night that Ron Patton passed away. Longtime producer, executive producer of Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. He and I were personal friends. He and I were colleagues at Ground Zero as well. We spent a long time on a car trip together going to Conspiracy Con 10 back in 2010. And I saw it last night and I cried for him. So I send out a RIP to Ron Patton of Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis. Having said all that, we run newworldnextweek.com. You can get Monarchy shirts. You can get Corbett Report USBs. And I get to play the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes right after my Thursday show at MediaMonarchy.com/listen 24/7. Commercial-free streaming news, music, memes, and more. So just chill till the next episode, and it will be a 9/11 plus 25 special. James, as Media Monarchy celebrates its 21st year, we will do an all 9/11 plus 25 episode. That is coming up next week for folks, but that is 6:42 in the can, my friend.
Excellent. Well, RIP to Ron Patton. And again, well, thank you for these stories, and we'll do it again next week with 9/11 plus 25.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Take care.